We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We had Cajun Domer says, are there graduated seniors that decide to stay even though they know that they won't play? What would be the coach's next step to meet their scholarship numbers?
There are times when that happens where graduated seniors will stay because they have room. They'll be depth guys, or some of these guys are like, hey, look, I want to stay. I'm a great teammate. I'm going to do everything you ask me to do, and it'll help me get my master's degree. You know, yep. I mean, there's that kind of thing too. So, yeah, you'll see that. Not many. It's not often, because you want to at least bring a guy back and give you some special teams value. Right. You know what I mean? So that's usually helpful. You know when they do that a lot is with walk-ons. Mm-hmm. They'll do that with, like, walk-ons and stuff. Let them kind of come back for an extra year to get their master's and stuff. Yeah. And if they have a scholarship, they'll give them that scholarship after everything's cleared. What did coaches do? What's the next step to meet their scholarship numbers? I mean, let the spring play out is the first thing. See how that goes. See what happens there. There'll be probably maybe a kid or two that goes on a medical scholarship. You know, there'll be a couple. There's going to be kids that leave after the spring, and when they get beat out, I mean, that's just going to happen. So those things will happen. I'm really not worried about where they are. They're at 89, I think, right now, Ryan. I think 89 right now. They'll be fine.
Well, that's it. Well, down 89. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
We had NH who said, which team do you think is the best landing spot for Cam Hart, Audric Estime, and Blake Fisher?
So you did Estime and a little bit earlier. Did you do Fisher? I know you mentioned a couple teams with Fisher. So what about Cam, Ryan? What do you think the best landing spots are for him? And then about Blake? Because this is a new question.
Well, Dan Quinn is in Washington now, and they are obviously a heavy cover three base system, which I think for Cam would be tremendous with his length and his long speed and the fact that he, you know, is a solid change of direction guy, but he's not stellar at it because he's a little bit high-legged. So I think any team that implements kind of what Dan Quinn has been in the NFL as far as a heavy cover three base system. So I think of Washington Commanders are obviously going to be one that's going to run that. Seattle Seahawks have traditionally been a team even after Dan Quinn left. that has run a lot of cover three heavy system. Obviously, he was just with the Dallas Cowboys, so they could use a guy, you know, opposite of, because I know they have a couple good corners. I mean, they, you know, they had the kid that was really good for them last year that went to Sac State and then Fresno State's name is Deron Bland. They have Deron Bland. Trayvon Diggs obviously has been banged up, but he should be coming back. But if they want to add depth to that room, Dallas Cowboys, I think, would make some sense. Washington Commanders, Seattle Seahawks. I think those teams run a system that would be very advantageous for what Cam Hart does.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it, 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all three. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
We had Brockett AB. Thank you for the question. Assuming everyone is healthy, reaching full potential, how would you split the running back workload if you were the OB?
Ryan, I kind of talked about this while you were out, so I'll let you handle this one. My thing, basically what I said quickly, Ryan, there's not going to be a one number one. There's going to be 1A, 1B that some weeks Jeremiah is going to get a heavier workload because he's either hot or the game plan dictates more his strengths. Other weeks it's going to be Jadarian. But I also said this was my prediction, and I wanted you to comment on this. They're both going to rush for 100 yards in at least a game next year. But my prediction is they're going to be a game next year where they both rush for 100 yards in a game at least once next season.
Yeah.
And so that, so it's not going to be RB1, RB2, RB3. It's going to be, these are our two dudes, and then this is our third down back or number three back. So that was my answer, Ryan, and I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts because I know you're very a pro Jeremiah Love guy.
Yeah, I mean, splits off the top of my head, I would say something like 45, 35, and then you figure out what the rest of the 20 goes to, whether it's a combination of Jabron Payne, Kedron Young, like, you know, whatever the rest of the percentage is there. But I do think that for me, Jeremiah Love would be the, I guess, highest volume getter. But either way, Jadarian Price is going to play a lot. So like a 45, 35, 20 split to the rest of the room. Like, I mean, that could be something that I think would be super interesting on the next level. But there will be a lot of instances where a part of those splits are them playing together at times, right? And I mean, I hope that we see it. I mean, there's a couple teams on this schedule because we know Notre Dame's schedule is not the hardest that they've had over the last few years, right? So there should be a game where you're able to just kind of run a team off the field a little bit, right? So whether that is 8 carries for 110 for Jadarian Price and 9 carries for 100 or 10 carries for 100 for a Jeremiah Love in the same contest, like those things are always possible. So I would be up for that.
Would it shock you at all if we see something similar to 2022 in that the number one rusher in yards was number two in attempts and the number two rusher in yards was number one in attempts? Cause I could see that where Jeremiah is number one in yards, but Jadarian actually has more carries in a relatively, cause it was like a 9 carry difference. Like Audric is a 156 yeah. for 922. And then Logan was at 165 or 920. And then Logan was 165 for 822. Now I think I think it'd be closer than that if they were only 9 carries difference. I don't think there'd be 100 yards difference because I don't think there's going to be a full yard per carry difference between them like there was with those two backs. But like I could see Jeremiah going for like 7 yards a carry, and Jadarian going for 6.5. And so Jeremiah rushes for more yards, but Jadarian has more, you know, 10, 15 more carries. I could see something like that.
Yep. No, right. I think it's very possible. I mean, either way, I expect both those guys to have relatively high yard per carry averages. If they don't, then I think that there's something that probably went wrong, whether that is them being up front or them being hampered by injury, like something non-disclosed like that. Yeah.
Agree.
Or your wide receiver unit isn't as good as you think it is. So there's more heavy.
Teams
heavy
slowed the box. Yeah.
Something.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shamrock Sean said, will we see Riley Leonard in the blue gold game? If not, is there any other players expected not to play?
Barring him having an injury, I fully expect him to play in the blue gold game. I don't know that he'll play much.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, he's still kind of getting in with this team. I think he needs to be part of it. As long as he doesn't have an injury setback, he should at least play. I don't know that I'd play him like maybe quite as much as you did Sam Hartman last year, but you kind of needed to because you were a little low on, you know, you were having a battle more so last year than I think that you're going to have this year. But we'll see.
I also think that like you can't supplement the experience of being at Notre Dame Stadium, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's obviously not going to be as hostile as it is going to be when, you know, you have a big game in there this year, but ultimately getting that first exposure to the fan base and potential ups and downs of a football game as well. Like, I think that thing matters a lot because, you know, we're all very, you know, I think most fans are high on Riley Leonard as far as like what his potential would be, but you know, there's some fans, like if Riley Leonard has a stinker of a drive, like some fans are going to be rowdy at a blue gold game and be like, this guy stinks, get him out of there. And I think Riley needs both sides of it, right? Yes. He needs to feel what it's like to be the guy in Notre Dame Stadium. He needs to feel what it's like of like, wow, that guy thinks I stink. I need to go out and prove him wrong. You know what I mean? So I think that experience is invaluable, to be honest with you. Ballpeen Shalele says, if you had to move one Notre Dame football player from defense to offense and one player from offense to defense, who would you move and to what position?
That is a good question. The first guy that pops in my head every time I think about moving a guy from defense to offense, and I would push back on this if somebody asked me the question, but it's just every time I've been asked this question a few times. It's hard for me not to think about putting Micah Bell in the slot or at running back. You know what I mean? Like, it's just because that's what he was more natural at. And that's kind of the first one that pops in my head, Ryan.
Yeah.
Preston Zinner. I thought a lot about Preston Zinner as an H-back. I think Preston Zinner could be a really good player for the Notre Dame offense. It's sort of like an H-back type of role in 12 personnel. I could see him being a really good player.
Yeah. If Mitchell Evans doesn't come back on the timetable you want, and then there's another tight end injury, like Preston Zinner would be a guy that could come in and play, right? Like it wouldn't be a
– and like be good. Not saying
starter, but like would be able to play and help you at that spot. So – yeah, he's a good one. Micah Bell, you know, I mean, I think you got Jaden Harrison obviously fulfilled that role of a little bit of a gadget type of dude. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now if you were able to supplement Micah Bell if you wanted to, I mean, I think you could definitely do it. offensively to defensively, it's a really, I really liked Cooper Flanagan's film at defensive end in high school, man. I really did. I think that he could legitimately play defensive end at Notre Dame. I'm not saying like a 10 sack guy, but yeah. Like he could play defensive end at Notre Dame in my
opinion. Like I could see that now, Ryan. Like, okay, Mitchell Evans is healthy. Eli Raritan's healthy. We're really good there. Right. Defensive end position's a little banged up. So Al Golden says, okay, you know, to Mike Denbrock, like, hey, we could really use Cooper Flanagan. He says, okay, we're going to have a trade. All right. Because I got Mitchell Evans. I got two big tight ends. So yeah, we'll talk about moving Cooper, but you're going to have to send number 25 over here so we can get an H-back type of guy. That would be my thing if I was Mike Denbrock. We'll get a little trade action going on here. You guys can have Cooper Flanagan at the end, but we're getting Preston Zinner to come play H-back for us. So yeah, I would actually, that's not a bad idea. I mean, honestly, Ryan, you know,
Flanagan was good at defense in high school, man.
And big ends kind of a question mark a little bit, you know, past huge, this season. Massive, yeah, I could see something like that. Yeah.
How about Charles Jagasaw, a defensive tackle?
I was thinking it, you know, like, because he was a pretty good D tackle. Like, get him like a goal line nose guard. If like he wasn't starting on the offensive line, yeah, I could see something like that.
Everyone always asks about Rocco Spindler at nose guard. Whatever,
because he was actually a really good high school nose tackle, and some teams actually offered him, but his feet have gotten significantly slower since then as well. Right. So he's just not the same athlete he was then. But yeah, he was actually, I think Rivals listed him as a D tackle until his senior year.
Yeah,
back then, his dad was a D lineman. I think that's partly where people see it too. His dad played in the NFL for a long time as a defensive tackle.
Couple injuries at safety. Micah Gilbert, go play some safety, dog.
Yeah, I could see that. I could definitely see that. Yeah, that's a good one. All right, here we go.
Michael Wright says, is there any chance that you would see Riley Leonard being pulled if he isn't pulling the trigger throwing the ball? Watched LSU versus Mississippi State 2022, and Jaden Daniels would not pull the trigger in the first half.
No, not for me. I mean, it would have to happen over a period of games.
Right.
But if he's having like a bad half against Louisville in game five, I'm not yanking him unless he has played poorly in the games leading up to then.
I'd also be pretty surprised if he's just not pulling the trigger, right? Like playing poorly and not pulling the trigger are two very different things, right? Like it doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would just like hold back and not take a chance. Like I don't get those vibes, but
I would be willing to do it if I thought that the number two guy was like kind of on par with him. You know, like let's say CJ Carr was a junior, Kenny Minchie was a junior, and the talent gap was really close. And in the, you know, but even then, it wouldn't be the first game that happens. Like, let's say he did that against Louisville and we barely won or we lost, right? I'm looking at it from a coaching standpoint. We get into that Florida State game and we can't afford another loss, and he's having trouble pulling the trigger again. And I've got an older, like, ready to play guy, because I just don't think Steve Angeli is that guy. You know, then maybe then, but with the makeup of the current team, I don't know that I'd feel comfortable doing that. You're losing him for the rest of the playoff. I mean, that's the thing too, is you're going to lose him. You're going to rock his confidence for the rest of the way.
What I was going to say is that you also like you at times let guys work through funks, right? Like, good thing Mike Denbrock didn't bench Jaden Daniels, because Jaden Daniels ended up being a Heisman Trophy winner the next year, right? I mean, like, so you got every situation is unique, obviously. Not everyone is one size fits all, but there are times where you have to let guys work through slumps, man. Like, you can't just be like, to the bench, you're done, you're never going to play again. Like, that's just not always the answer for everything. It's really not.
If you had like a young kid and a veteran behind him, like kind of like with Tommy Reese and Everett Golson, there was an understanding. Hey, listen, if you're struggling a little bit, we may put Tommy in to kind of get. But there was always that they went into games with that understanding. We got a veteran kid. If the young guy's, you know, a little overwhelmed, you know, but you know, you're still our guy. That would also be the opposite of what the reality is here at Notre Dame with the current makeup as well.
You have a senior quarterback comparative to a rookie or freshman,
far more experienced than everybody else on the roster.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have John A1. My top three uncommitted 2025 class player wish list is Dallas Golden, Jaydon Blair, and Taylen Taylor. What is your top three uncommitted 2025 wish list?
I might. Boy, that's a tough one. It's hard to really disagree, John, with your list. I mean, the first two, I'm definitely on board with those.
I would almost have to defer to wide receiver with one, just because I need them to see get a guy like a Taylor Taylor or a Derek Meadows even. But I would, for me, like my top three as far as guys that I'm high on that I think have like tremendous upside included into this, it would be the first two, Dallas Goedert and Jaydon Blair. And then I would also throw in Marco Jones in there, because I think if you don't get Damian Shanklin in the class, Marco Jones is so important to 2025, because he is the only linebacker outside of Dominic Kulak that could potentially be a Viper down the road. He's the only one.
And he's even talked to you about it, right? He said to you in discussions, he's that self-aware. You know, I could see myself being that kind of guy. Absolutely. Yep.
He becomes very important if you get Damian Shanklin.
He's a sharp kid, Ryan, just from limited conversations that I know you've had and talking to some other people and just listening to him talk. He's a pretty sharp kid. He seems like a pretty sharp kid.
We came on the podcast, man. Did a great job on the podcast, too. Yep.
And speaking of Jaydon Blair, we did have a question about that from Adam Blair. We'll go ahead and answer that one around. He says, hey, guys, I've been in school recently and busy, so I haven't been able to keep up. How are we feeling about Jaydon Blair?
I still feel pretty good, Adam. I mean, look, I think that it is going to be a battle down the stretch, and the next month and a half here of visits are going to be so important. You know, like we head into this decision-making process where I still feel that Penn State and Notre Dame have kind of distanced themselves a little bit. I think a team like a Florida State is still staying around, obviously, right, into that conversation. But I do think that Notre Dame is a top two team for Jaydon Blair right now. I think it's going to come down to, can you successfully kill the final visits to Notre Dame? Because if you do, I think you have a chance to close. But it's going to come down to really knocking that last one out of the park, because you have recovered pretty well. You know, kind of talking to Jaydon, like he has a evolving and good relationship with Mike Mickens, which I think is very important kind of moving forward after Chris O'Leary left. He is obviously a Notre Dame kid. There's no doubt about it. It's going to come down to, can you outdo Penn State and the other guys on the final visits, right? That's what it's going to come down to. So still feel good about it, but Notre Dame needs to close and needs to close very hard on that one.
I like where Notre Dame is at right now, but as you said, Ryan, you nailed it. The close is going to be the key. There are so many, and I don't know if it's an anomaly, if this is beginning a trend. There are so many very, very talented kids in this class that I view as top 50-ish kind of guys that are very, like, what's a Notre Dame kid? That's a Notre Dame kid. Yeah, Ivan Jaydon Taylor's Blair's that good. Way. Yeah. Jaydon Blair's that way. Dallas Golden is that way. Mark Zachary is that way. Marco Jones is that way. Noah McHale may not end up at Notre Dame, but I see a lot of that in him as well.
He's a Notre Dame kid.
There's a lot of kids like that. Now, that you're just like, man, that guy would fit in great at Notre Dame. When we talk about Notre Dame kid, it's not he'd be a great football player. It's the overall package of the type of young man that he is. Right. There's a lot of them in this class, man, like at skill positions. Like you start to see why they're having so much success getting a lot of interest from these talented DBs. Yep. It's partly the job Mike Mickens is doing, his ability to recruit, Chris O'Leary's ability to recruit, guys in the NFL. But it's also these kids are just more prone to having interest in a place like Notre Dame than maybe other kids haven't from those regions in the past, which factors into it as well.
I would even say on offensively, like, if Notre Dame's, you know, we'll see if Notre Dame's able to close on Derek Meadows, the receiver out of Bishop Gorman, that's here this weekend. But that is 100% a Notre Dame kid. He came on the podcast. That is a Notre Dame kid. Like, there's no doubt about it. So, yeah.
Yes. He's the biggest need in the class from a skill set that you need. Like, I think Taylor Taylor's a better player. Definitely a better player. Especially from a floor ceiling. But it's kind of like talk about with Cam. I have my questions about Derek Meadows. But there's no doubt that if he hits, he's going to be, I mean, he could have like a Justin Ross type of impact at Notre Dame if he hits. When I look back at what Justin was as a freshman, like 46 catches for 1,000 yards. Possibly, like I'm not saying as a freshman, I'm talking about like down the road, right? If he hits, he may not hit. But you just don't have that on the roster, Ryan. You don't have that 6'5", 6'6", kid that can fly. You just don't have it on the roster right now. You don't.
I've said it on a podcast in the past, and someone actually has mentioned on the board the other day that I also feel a lot better about taking a gamble on Derek Meadows, knowing that Mike Brown's the wide receiver coach moving forward, right? So
yeah,
he's much more likely to get everything out of him than what the previous wide receiver coach was able to do.
Agree so. Completely. And yeah. We've talked about that in the past with like offensive linemen, Ryan, where it's like, I don't know if this is the kind of kid I'd want to take if Jeff Quinn's your line coach. But Harry Hiestand, sure. Joe Rudolph, we'll see. But based on what he did at Wisconsin, I mean, that's what he built his entire line around was developmental kids, you know? And so you think that he would do well there.
Joe Rudolph at Pittsburgh and Wisconsin was a really weird offensive line coach because I felt like he got the best out of the underrated dudes, but didn't always the top of the board guys didn't always like
Logan Brown.
It's weird. Right. It's just kind of weird. Yeah, Logan Brown and a couple of those guys. But it's like Brian O'Neill, you find him and turn him into a first round draft pick by the NFL, right? And then Logan Brush, you turn into a day two draft pick at guard that, you know, by the Rams. Like you just take some of those like three-star hidden gem guys and develop them well, but you don't always get the most out of the top shelf guys, which is kind of weird, a little bit odd.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Maltavius with Super Chat. Thank you so much. Said IB Nation over under 10 and a half wins. Is this real? What are your thoughts, Brian? Lofty expectations for a team having a lot of turnover, right? Hashtag we are Notre Dame.
Yeah. You know, Maltavius, we're still learning so much about this new era of college football because in the past, it'd be a lot tougher to overcome some of the numbers losses that they had. But now in this era, like you know, you lose Tobias Merriweather and Chris Tyree and Rico Flores, and you're just like, okay, but you replace them with Chris Mitchell and Bo Collins and Jaden Harrison as transfers, guys that have played college football and been starters in college football. You know, you lose a Javonte Jean-Baptiste and a Nano Safa-Mensah, you replace them with a six-year senior from Duke and RJ Open. It's just such a different era that it's easier to have some of those replacements, especially in a way that Notre Dame does it, which is a filling holes type of portal type of thing. But I also, you know, like Notre Dame's having a lot of turnover, but I think something that we're missing is Notre Dame did a pretty darn good job last year, and it was out of necessity of playing a lot of guys last season. Like not a single receiver started more than six games last year, you know. So yeah, you lost three guys that started a lot of games, but none of them, like, so did Jaden Thomas, so did Jaden Greathouse, so did Jordan Faison, so you know what I mean. So you look at cornerback and you're like, this is where recruiting matters. You lose a guy like Cam Hart. Not a lot of teams can lose a guy like Cam Hart and say, you should be all right because you've got Christian Gray coming down the pike, right? I mean, you lose a guy like J.D. Burchin and Maris Leafau, and you're just like, all right, you've got Drake Bowen and Jaden Osbury and Jalen Snead and Kingston Viliamahasa. Like, this is why recruiting is so important because it's you're not rebuilding, you're reloading. You know, we see, Georgia loses. Think about some of the D linemen and the front seven guys they lost off their team in 2021. And they came out 2022 and they were still phenomenal because they had recruited and developed that position. So, you know, I 10 over under 10 and a half wins. I could see that.
Over.
You know, I mean,
over.
Like, over. I could see that. And I'm assuming he's talking regular season here, is my assumption.
Over. Over.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that, Ryan. Like I know you're being kind of like having some fun with it, but like it's like I could see it. I mean,
I know it's what I believe, though. Right? It's what because I believe. Yeah.
You look.
Yeah.
One of the questions we had too, Ryan, was what rosters in college football you think have better rosters than Notre Dame? And I said, well, let's just look for the purpose of this car. What rosters on Notre Dame's schedule are better than the roster Notre Dame has? And I don't know that there is one. I don't think USC has a better roster than Notre Dame. I don't think Florida State has a better roster than Notre Dame. I don't think Texas A&M has a better roster than Notre Dame. There are positions where they may be better than Notre Dame at that position, but I don't know that there's anybody that I think, say, that team is close. That team might be close, but I don't even know then if it's all that close enough to beat them. Louisville's roster last year was not as good as Notre Dame's, but it was good enough to beat them. Right. So Ohio State, I think it's debatable top to bottom who had the better roster. It's debatable. I'd probably give an edge to Ohio State last year, but it was close. But it was certainly Notre Dame was good enough to beat them. In the end, Ohio State got the win. Notre Dame has a better roster than Duke, but it was good enough to beat them if Notre Dame played poorly, and they did. Right. Notre Dame certainly has a better roster than Clemson last year, but Clemson's roster was good enough to beat Notre Dame if they didn't bring it, and they didn't. So there's four or five teams on the schedule that if Notre Dame doesn't bring it, can beat Notre Dame. But I don't think there's anybody that I'm like, yeah, that roster's as good as Notre Dame's. Where last year there was debate. It was debatable if Notre Dame or Ohio State had a better roster. I'd probably lean towards Ohio State all around, but it's debatable.
Yeah.
You know? This year, I mean, who do you think has the best roster that Notre Dame faces this year, Ryan? Top to bottom, all both sides of the ball, all around. Florida State or A&M is probably my discussion. I think USC's not there. I don't think USC's there. I think that's probably the two best.
I'd probably go A&M, I guess, if I had to pick one. Yeah.
So, and you're getting them game one with a new coach.
They have a lot of reclamation projects on that offense, especially. Like Bryce Foster at center took a huge step back last year. I think he's very good, though, when he is good. And then you have Connor Wigman, who I think when Connor Wigman's healthy is pretty very dang good. Talented. I like Connor Wigman a lot. But then Ruben Fothery, the offensive tackle, has been banged up the last couple of years. He hasn't been quite the same. Defensively, you have some guys, but again, it's about getting the most out of them because the previous staff didn't get the most out of them. Yeah. So there's a lot of reclamation projects on that Texas A&M team, but they're very talented. There's no doubt
and
about
they
that.
Got in the kid from Purdue that you like a lot.
Nick
to help replace some of the guys they've lost, right? Like they lost some pretty good D linemen, but they got a kid that I know you're super high on.
I think they at least upgraded one. Like I know they lost a few defensive linemen, but like if I painted it just as broad strokes of one versus one, you lost Fidel Diggs, you replaced him with a better player, Nick Scowerton, in my opinion, right? So like we'll paint it that way, which I think you can.
What is this going to come down to, Ryan? Is simply this. How quickly can the new starters at two important positions for Notre Dame grow up, linebacker, safety, and how good's the offensive line going to be? That's really what this boils down to for me. I have no doubt that Notre Dame's going to be really good at running back. I don't have a lot of doubt. Like, I'm more confident at quarterback this year than I have been in the past because here's my thing. Everybody knows my stance on Steve Angeli, but my stance on Steve Angeli has to do with can he win a title?
Right.
I don't think he can. But that's the – it's not can he play – can he competently lead you to games against most of your schedule? If Steve Angeli's Notre Dame starting quarterback this year, I think they're capable of being 10-2. I do. But can they go win a title? That's a different conversation. So if Riley gets hurt between Steve Angeli, C.J. Carr, Kenny Minchie, Notre Dame can keep winning. They just have to win a little bit different. Because they are so loaded at running back, you can shift to being more run-heavy. I think they have a lot of talent at receiver. The margin for error at receiver is so much greater than it was the last 2 years. You've got one of the better tight end rooms in college football. You've got a very, very deep defensive line room that may not have any first-round picks, but a lot of proven, productive players. You've got loads of talent at linebacker. You might have one of the three or four best cornerback rooms in all of college football. And your biggest question mark is safety, where you return a unanimous All-American. You know what I mean? So it all boils down to how good is the line going to be and how quickly can they grow up? Mm-hmm. That's the thing for me. Can they grow up by week five when they play Louisville? That's really what it boils down to. Because even if you lose to A&M, which I don't think Notre Dame will, you go on a run and win the rest of your games, you're in the playoff. You're a five seed in the playoff. Sure. Like that's the way I look at it, right? Mm-hmm. Worst case, you can lose maybe one more game and still get in. But it's the Louisville game is the next test. If your offensive line has to grow up by then, I think that's the only kryptonite that we could see this team have, in my opinion, because I think they can handle a quarterback injury more than they have in the past. I think they have more they can handle an injury on the D-line better than they have in the past. I think they can handle injuries at receiver way better than they have the last couple of years. If they lose one of the two running backs, okay, so who's next? Jabron Payne, who I think could be a 1,000-yard rusher at a place like Notre Dame. Kedron Young, who I think is a dude. And I mean, like, that's the thing, right? You're so much better prepared to handle those injuries. It all comes down to, can the dudes up front handle business? That's really what it comes like. And Maltavius, thank you so much for the super chat, man, because this is a great question. Those are lofty expectations, but honestly, if this coaching staff is as good as we think it is and should be, and if this roster is what we think it is, and you look at the schedule the way that it is, I don't think it's unfair to say that this team should be 11-1. Yeah. I don't think it's unfair at all. Saying 11.5, like, I'm taking the under because, like, you're going to stub your toe somewhere, I think, right? I mean, I just – going undefeated is hard, especially against this particular schedule, because there are enough teams that can beat you if you have an off night. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, right now, what I know of this team now and of other teams, sure, I think that's more than reasonable. I mean, who would you take at quarterback, Ryan? DJ Uiagalelei or Riley Leonard? I think I know the answer to that. Leonard. Who has a better running back room right now?
What, Notre Dame or Florida State?
Mm-hmm.
Notre Dame.
Who has a better receiver room right now?
I don't even know who's in Florida State's receiver room, so Notre Dame by default, I guess.
Who has a better tight end room?
Notre Dame.
Yeah. Who has more talent along the offensive line?
Notre Dame. Yeah.
All right. And Ohio, Florida State was a team that, like, had a really darn good offense last season, right? So, and, you know, so again, this is just like, this is where they should be. The talent's there, man. It's time to, no more excuses. That's where we're at. And I know that's spring ball excitement and all that, but that, I mean, that's where I'm at, man. Yep. I think this team has that kind of talent potential. It's time to stop losing those games you're not supposed to lose. And last year they lost two games they had no business losing. They had no business losing to Louisville. They had no business losing to Clemson. Like, Ohio State, you should have beat Ohio State. Should have. But you can respect that loss because that's a really talented football team. No business losing to Louisville. No business losing a Clemson team that had 8 starters out with injuries. Like, just those are the games you have to stop losing, in my opinion, yeah. Ryan. And I think they have the ability to do so, because they don't have some of the flaws that they had last year. We're going to get the last few here, Ryan, before we've got to get rolling. I'm going to read this one, cause I can't wait to see your response and your answer to this one. Back up says, is Mitch Trubisky a good pro comp for Riley Leonard?
No.
Okay. Do you have one?
certainly not Ryan, that one.
You handle that very calmly. I appreciate, respect your ability to do that.
Someone mentioned Marcus Mariota before. I think Marcus Mariota is an interesting comp. Yeah. I mean, like, body type wise, dual threat ability wise. I understand the Mitch Trubisky thing. Like, Mitch Trubisky actually was a pretty good athlete and, you know, a decent frame and everything. But nah, I'm not a Mitch Trubisky guy, man. So no thanks.
Here's one, Ryan, that's a recruiting question. So I'll ask this one. This is from Jesse Ferguson. Thank you, Jesse. I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but it doesn't mean that it's not important, because if you're asking
we actually also haven't been asked that much.
Not often. But is Notre Dame a major player for Nathaniel Owusu-Boateng? I know Stanford is in the mix, which tells me that academics are important to him.
I mean, they are, no doubt. I would say that, yes, Notre Dame is in the mix. Notre Dame in this one has to be ready to go the long haul is the thing, right? And I think that they will, you know, potentially go the long haul, because he is a elite level talent at the position. I mean, he's got some big time upside. Obviously, he has the ties to Notre Dame with his brother being an All-American there, right? But ultimately, Notre Dame is in the mix without question. He really had a great visit to Notre Dame, obviously, a couple months ago. He has already talked about making a visit or taking an official visit to Notre Dame that hasn't been scheduled quite yet. But when he does, I think Notre Dame could be in it for the long haul, Jesse. Absolutely. They just have to be persistent and patient with it, because this is not one that's going to end this summer, more than likely. He's been talking about taking this one up to the National Signing Day. So you have to be patient with it.
And I think Notre Dame is purposely being patient in their recruitment of him and not trying to force visits and force decisions and things like that. Yep. All right, let's get, I'm trying to go through some of these we'll wrap up with. This is more of a comment from Frank G. Says nothing against Jordan Faison. I believe he's a really good athlete that fits in their name, but a lot can change from sophomore year to even the end of their junior
year. Dylan Faison, he's talking about, right?
Oh, Dylan Faison, yes.
Yeah. I mean, Frank, my counter would be, though, this is that my biggest negative against Dylan Faison right now is that he's skinny, right? Yeah. And that is going to improve over a year or two in a good way, right? Like, he's not going to get less athletic. I mean, the big thing is, like, is he going to take the jumps that you would like from sophomore to junior to senior? Like, those are obviously major questions. But I watched him athletically, and I'm like, athletically, I'm cool. Like, he can move, and he's explosive, and he's twitched up, and, like, there's a lot of good value there. It's just about, I mean, he's a skinny kid right now, right? Play strength is going to be an issue early on, obviously. So can he put good weight on, maintain explosiveness, or get more explosive? I mean, those are going to be the questions. But I mean, so all that to say is the things that you want him to improve on are things that are very easily improved on, right? Like just natural nutrition and maturity. Like all those things I think are going to be fine.
This is a very fair comment from Frank G. And we've seen guys not progress. I remember watching, who was the kid that went to Ohio State, played center for Ohio State, was from Kentucky. I'm drawing a blank. He was drafted recently, went to the Packers, drafted by the Packers.
Oh, Josh Myers. Yeah.
I watched Josh Myers as a sophomore. I'm like, this is one of the best offensive linemen in high school football, regardless of class. This kid is elite. But as he got older, his body changes, he got tighter and less athletic and less explosive. And he went from a guy that I saw as a pure Zach Martin type of left tackle in college to a center, right? That happens. But that tends to happen more with bigger guys. You don't see that as much with, like, guys like Dylan Faison don't all of a sudden get slower from their sophomore to senior year, right? Unless they're just out, like, just being stupid all the time, you know what I mean? Like doing things that he shouldn't be doing. What you can find, Ryan, is, like, there have been guys I've seen that are just, like, jacked up, like, sophomores. They're like, that kid is what he is. Like, exactly. He may not grow and progress, and he might actually stiffen up as he gets older, right? So, but you don't often see that with skill players. You really don't. Because, like you said, if his game doesn't get an ounce better, if his speed doesn't get an ounce better, his quickness and feet don't get an ounce better, but he just naturally gains 15 pounds and has normal sophomore to senior strength, he's still a Notre Dame kid, a Notre Dame caliber player, in my opinion, referring to Dylan Faison. So that's what I would say. But it's a fair question, Frank. It is. I tend to worry more about that with bigger guys than I do with skill players. Yep. Paul Hamilton, Paul, we're not going to have time to get to this question. If you're on the message board, could you put this on the message board? Because I think this would be a really fun conversation. I have to really think about that one. And maybe we'll have another mailbag on Monday, Paul. Maybe if you bring this one back on Monday, Ryan and I might have a little bit more time to prepare and think about that one. But I did want to ask this, Ryan. Last 10 years, so that's 14 to 23. What is the best Notre Dame team what was the best Notre Dame team? I'll say that. What was the best Notre Dame team from 14 to 20? Not most talented, but the best team. I think this is kind of an easy answer, to be honest with you.
What, 2018?
I think it's 2018. Best team.
Yeah, I do. 2018. I would say 2018. Yeah.
I think 15 probably had more talent top to bottom.
My mind got crossed up there. For some reason, my mind went all the way back to 2012, and that's why it was a little bit of a conversation in my head. So
2012 would be a conversation. I would say that's a conversation. I'd probably still take 18, but 2012 was more battle test. I mean, there was nobody that they beat, maybe Michigan in 18, that Oklahoma, but they got Michigan at home.
Yeah.
Like that road game against Oklahoma, beating that Stanford team. Like that was a really good Stanford
team. That goal line stand at the end.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That was probably the best team in the traditional sense. The team that I think you could make the best run with would have been the 2018 team.
Sure. Yeah. That's fair.
Yep. But in the last 10 years, it's a no-brainer. Yep. So that's a good and the worst is easy. I mean, that's not even debatable. It's the 16 team. So, yeah.
16 the four and eight team is the worst team that they had
by far. And the 14 team is weird because the first half of that team was one of the best we've seen from Notre Dame in the last 10 years. The second half of that team rivals 2016 as the worst Notre Dame team that we've seen. So it's like, which version of 14 do you want to go with? But the other eight teams in that stretch were pretty good football teams. I mean, your worst year outside of those two was 2022's 9-14. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of 10-win teams in that stretch. All right, last couple here, Ryan. Here's an interesting from John A1. He says, what percentage would you give Josh Burnham and RJ Oben being the starters at the end positions by season's start? So he's referring to them, one guy going over to Viper and being the starter. What would be the percentage that you would give?
I think that would be very dependent, John, on, like, for me, for that move to happen, I think that it's more a Josh Burnham breaks out, and then you have to get both of them on the field, and then RJ moves over to Viper, right? So it'd be a lower percentage. I mean, maybe like 20%, 15%. Like, I don't think it's a crazy high number. I think it would be great, though. I mean, if Josh Burnham really has a great year, I mean, a great offseason, and breaks out, and then you have the luxury of moving RJ Oben to Viper and mix and match with Jordan Botello, that would be great. But I don't think it's a very high percentage right now. So I'd be like 15, 20% lower percentage for me.
I'm with you on that. I think if you'd have said by season's end, I might have been able to give more odds on that. But I think Jordan Botello is just too good to just not at least start the season there. It'd have to be an injury or he busts. I think if you were to tell me that Jordan Botello is going to have a major injury between now and then, I would actually say that's a pretty high odds. Because I do think if it was like, if he wasn't an option, I think you'd see one of those guys get worked over there, assuming. But here's the thing. If you move one of those guys over there, who's the number two big end?
Right. Right.
So exactly, does Bryce Young break out?
Like Bryce Young or somebody to break out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Or Tyson Ford to take a massive step, like somebody.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Ryan, this is going to be the last two that we're going to get to here. This is a recruiting question, and I know you've talked about it in another show, but I would just kind of briefly give your thoughts on this now. Rob Osgood asked, question about the 2016 recruiting class. What positions are strong in numbers and weak in others? Again, this is very early. It's a sophomore film. There's a lot of kids I know that you still have to watch. But just early impressions, Ryan, what would you say are what positions are strong in numbers and weak in others?
I think that quarterback seems like it's a very deep year that we've seen the last couple years, like 2025 and 2026 involved. I think quarterback's pretty deep. Wide receiver's a deep group from what I have seen so far. I think running back, after having a couple running back classes overall, I think that 2026 running back class is really good as well. If you're asking me weak, I think the one that pops to my mind immediately is linebacker, like true linebacker. I'm not talking about like hybrid Viper types, right? Like, I'm talking about true stacked linebacker position. I think that that is a little bit of a weaker class in 2026 from what I've seen early on. And I think the offensive tackle spot is very top heavy with Jackson Cantwell and a couple of those dudes. But I do think that as I've gotten into the depth a little bit more, I think it's a little bit of a lack of depth class, right? So you have a couple studs up top, but I think it tapers off a little bit. So that's kind of how I see the class as of now.
And then here's a good answer, Ryan. Thank you for that. And then I know, Ryan, you'll have a lot of this as we kind of get into the, you know, once we get through the, especially the, like, it's cyclical. Like, right now we're talking about a lot of 26. As we get into like May and June, we'll talk a lot more about 25 because that's when visits will be happening again. And once we get out of that, it'll be talking a lot more about the 26 again. So I'm looking forward to watching the film. Yeah, I think we started on that. It's driving me crazy. But yeah, it's so far so good, Ryan. Just initially, your early impression. Mine is that this has got a chance to be a really strong class just as a whole nationally. Do you have kind of an early feel right now? Like, I've even watched some of the kids and their name's not on that are kind of considered highly ranked guys. That I think this has got a chance, partly because I think quarterback drives a lot of that, and I think this has a chance to be a really good quarterback class.
Agreed. Yep. Quarterback, wide receiver. I think tight end is a pretty silly class too. Running back's deeper than it usually is, in my opinion. I haven't seen a ton of corners outside of like Joey O'Brien and a couple. So I'll defer to that one specifically, but a lot of Vipers in this class too, I would say. Yeah. So yeah, I think nationally, it seems like a very good class overall.
Last one, Ryan. And then we got to get rolling. This is the last one.
John A wants that Deion Colsey has to beat more productive competition in his senior year than both Javon McKinley and Miles Boykin did. If the light comes on for Deion, would you predict him to outproduce both in 2024?
So Javon had 42 catches for 717 yards and 3 touchdowns. Yeah. Miles had 59 catches for 872 yards and 8 touchdowns. The premise of John's question is why I would say yes, if the light goes on, he would outproduce Javon. But no, he would not outproduce Miles, because there are, like, part of the reason Miles didn't have even bigger numbers is because you had Chase,
right,
who put up pretty good numbers that year. And you had Chris Fink, who caught a lot of balls, and you were a team that ran the football a lot. Like, I think it's going to be hard for any receiver to have borderline 60 catches for borderline 900 yards and borderline 10 touchdowns because of how much. I mean, and you also, I would argue, have a better tight end in as a receiver in this than what Alize Mack. Alize Mack was just, he never panned out to what he was. I would take Mitchell Evans over him as of right now if they're both healthy, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then, of course, you also have Ryan. Your running backs weren't really heavily involved in the pass game in 2018. I expect this group to have much more involvement in the pass game, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just going to be so hard to repeat that. But if Deion, let's just say, forget whether we think he will or won't, okay? I tell you, Ryan, I've looked into the future. The light goes on for Deion Colsey.
Sure.
45 to 50 catches for more than 717 yards and more than 3 touchdowns is definitely, I think, something he would do.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly. Yeah. Certainly.
I mean, he's a lot more talented than Javon McGinley is, just from an athletic perspective, right? I mean, Javon had great hands, and I know he was a, you know, he had a nice final year. There's no doubt really stepped to the plate.
He could win. That's the thing Javon did. Yeah. He could win contested balls in the ways that we haven't seen a lot of guys win the last couple of years, but he couldn't separate the way that some of these other guys could.
Right. And I don't know. Yeah. So yes, he could. It's obviously,
again, we're big asterisk. We're for the premise of the conversation, the light goes on. Do you think he can get to like 60 catches and 900 yards and 9 touchdowns, which would be what he'd have to do to outperform?
No, it's not
that he does
too many mouths to feed.
Okay. So you agree with me. It's not that he can't do it. I mean, I think he could be that.
I thought I was talking about Javon McKinley's numbers. Like, I think he could match or better.
McKinley's numbers. We agree on that. I'm moving now to Miles numbers. So to surpass Miles, he'd have to basically have 60 catches, 900 yards, and 9 touchdowns. I think if the light goes on, the talent is there to do that. But I think you said it, Ryan. There's too many mouths to feed for one guy, because he'd have to be Will Fuller, Michael Floyd, Golden Tate. Miles was not that. Deion's not that, right? I think Deion could be very similar to Miles if he pans out. He's not as good as Chase was in 2019 if he pans out. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
So he's not Michael Floyd if he pans out, if the light goes on. He's not Golden Tate if the light goes on. He's not Will Fuller, and he'd need to be that to separate to that degree on this team. So definitely somewhere in between Miles and Javon, in my opinion, if the light goes on.
Would agree.
We'll see if he can do it. Yeah. Well, Mr. Roberts, my friend, that is going to do it, buddy. Why don't you go ahead and take us out of here?
Everyone, thank you so much for joining the show today. Please make sure, if you are not now, again, our content is not going to be up for free consumption at irishbreakdown.com over the next couple of days. So go to boards.irishbreakdown.com if you want to read along with all of the content that we'll be continuing to pull out. Everybody, premium subscribers, is still going to get this content for the foreseeable future. Okay. So make sure to go to boards.irishbreakdown.com before you leave the YouTube channel. Hit that like button for us. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast and hit that notification bell. If you listen to us on your favorite podcast platform, whether that's Apple, Spotify, or anything in between, also subscribe. 5-star reviews are very much appreciated. Rapid Fire is up next here as well at 5 o'clock. So if you guys are sticking around, 5 o'clock Rapid Fire, and we will see you guys very soon on Monday for another Free-for-All Mailbag here on the Irish Breakdown Podcast.